Brian, thank you very much. Just coming up to 4 minutes past 11 now. Now, as we heard earlier in the programme, despite a much improving situation in Ireland, many countries around the world are seeing dramatic spikes in coronavirus cases. The concern remains that as the economy opens up here and as we head into the autumn, we could face a second wave of COVID-19 and our health service could come under further sustained pressure. Well, on the line now is consultant in intensive care medicine at University Hospital Limerick and past president of the Intensive Care Society of Ireland, Dr. Catherine Motherway. And Catherine, thank you very much for joining me this morning. We might start firstly with the good news, because yesterday, despite the tragedy of six people losing their lives to COVID-19, there were only 5 new confirmed cases and only 9 people in ICU with the disease. Could you put that ICU figure in perspective for us in comparison to where we were at the peak of the outbreak?
Well, at the peak of the outbreak, I think we had at least 160 cases, and we've had over 420 admissions to critical care over the period of the outbreak. So it is wonderful that we are seeing very much reduced prevalence and very much, as a result, reduced incidence of severe disease because there's less disease around. Obviously, we've lost life in ICU, as we've had in other places, and we send our condolences to those families. Mm. But in general, the first wave of the disease has settled. And we will wait events, as already you've made reference to, as we open up the economy and as we all go about our business again.
Yeah, and a big day in that reopening is this coming Monday, because we're going to have creches, pubs, restaurants, other outlets are opening up. Are you confident that the famous R number, the reproductive rate, will be able to stay under 1 despite all this opening up and more people interacting with each other?
Oh, I don't think anybody can be confident, but I think we can hopefully rely on the Irish community, which have done a wonderful job, to continue the personal behaviour, which includes the physical distancing, the cough etiquette and the hand washing, to keep transmission as low as possible, and now obviously to wear face masks in public places as is being recommended. And what that's what the people can do, and what the health service will need to do then is to ensure that those patients who present with symptoms, and people need to ensure that with symptoms they will present to their GP, perhaps more so than they did last year. If you had a cough and a cold, you did not go to your GP. This year, you have to go to your GP, or you have to present to your GP and ring him or her, and ensure that you isolate and test, because it's very difficult to differentiate this disease from other common respiratory illnesses, and it can spread and spread rapidly. So hopefully people will present to their GP, will keep up the good behaviour, and then we will be able to test and trace and contact everybody as if they get sick. And we do expect to see a peak, as we've seen in Australia. They're seeing it there, they're seeing it in Germany, they're seeing it in Seoul, but they're actively picking up these cases and hopefully going trying to control the disease.
So you're not surprised to see that happening in those countries?
Oh God, no. No, it's a very transmissible disease and it's not gone away. And there's over 9.5 million people in the world who've had this disease. Over 4 million of them still have it, and that probably is a much underestimated figure, because lots of people don't realise they have it and haven't presented, obviously.
We were just speaking to John Byrne Murdoch from the Financial Times before the news about the global figures, and he was saying it doesn't paint a pretty picture at all when you look at the data in terms
upsetting.
Of the disease. It is indeed. But we also know at the same time the Cabinet is discussing the travel quarantine arrangements later,
indeed.
And there's a suggestion that we might be lifting quarantine for some countries, that we'd have air bridges with them where the case numbers are very low. What do you make of that? Do you think that will work, or how do you think travel should be handled?
As I've said repeatedly, I'm not a public health expert. I think we'll wait and see what their advice is, and presumably they will have, if you travel to places with low prevalence, there may be a certain safety in that. But I don't really have enough information, Sarah. I would personally be careful about unnecessary travel at the moment, because I do think that we saw in China that they actually had a resurgence of cases from people going abroad. So if we are going to travel, we need to be very careful about when we come back and how we monitor our symptoms. If we go to places with high incidence of disease, and obviously the travel industry has been decimated in terms of the people who work there, so I can see why people will want to try and get back to travelling, but they have to be very careful and to continue to be diligent in terms of their personal behaviour. and wait and see what our travel experts, who will have more information about prevalence of disease in other countries than I would have.
Okay, so if we look forward then to autumn, I know the HSE at their briefing yesterday said that the health service is looking at preparing for the autumn and increasing capacity should we face this second wave. And I know that you've said in the past that we need to double our ICU bed capacity.
Yes.
How does that look? How quickly would that work need to be done, and how crucial is it at this point?
That work needs to be done reasonably quickly, but obviously can't happen overnight for a number of reasons. One, you can't recruit overnight. What they need to do quickly is to try and ensure we have enough isolation facilities and try and work on that, because isolation is key. So if we have patients who are presented with respiratory disease, we need to be able to isolate them from other patients if we think they have COVID. We will need to ensure that we have rapid turnaround in terms of our testing, and that's very much improved than it was at the beginning. And thanks to the work of our pathology services, that is much better than it was at the start of this. We are better prepared on that from that point of view. We currently are probably trimming back on our surge bed capacity, and we now know that we have nurses who will be able to return to us should that arise. But we do need to permanently increase our capacity. That's so that we can deal with the surge, and so we can continue to provide care to elective high-risk patients who had to have their surgical procedures and other procedures deferred during the last COVID-19 of necessity. But we'd like to continue to care for those patients as well as caring for any surge. So that's why we really need to work on this with the HSE. Mm. They do have plans. Some of those plans will take a long time to come to fruition. There does need to be a new build. But there are ways and means of in the interim, trying to improve our isolation facilities by modular builds and stuff, so long as they're not a permanent feature, but they do need to do something for the winter, both at ward level and at ICU level in terms, because if you have a patient in a ward who has respiratory symptoms and might have COVID, that will prevent you from using those other beds for other patients because it's so transmissible. So they need to work and work hard on that. And in fairness, I think they are.
I think a lot of people are very concerned, Catherine, going into the winter, because this disease hit here when we were coming out of the winter in the spring. And we're all aware of what the hospitals can look like here in the winter in terms of overcrowding and everybody getting sick and the flu and all of that. So how confident are you that we can manage that? Or should people be scared?
People should be careful about their own personal behaviour, because the personal behaviour I refer to will prevent you getting the flu as well as COVID-19. The winter is always difficult. I think we are better prepared now. We know how we can surge. We do know that we can do that, and we did it very effectively on the last occasion, helped very much by the population diminishing the amount of disease that was actually transmitting. I mean, they did flatten the curve hugely for us. So I think people should be careful and should continue to realise that this disease exists. At the moment, the prevalence is very low. It still exists, and it will reignite as we move around the place if we're not careful. And we need to take our own personal responsibility is really important.
Okay. I suppose what I'm wondering is, if a second surge hits in autumn,
yes,
when our hospitals are under pressure in a way that we have seen in past years without coronavirus, they can't cope with just ordinary illnesses that we're used to. If we have all those ordinary illnesses and coronavirus on top, can our hospital system cope?
Our hospital system will be under pressure, but it will cope by doing what it did the last time around, cancelling all elective work.
So
that's what will happen.
Okay.
And we'd prefer not to do that, if that's at all possible, because people would like to have their elective surgery. It's really important for people. But that's what will happen. And we will create extra capacity as we did in the past. But it is really important that we create extra capacity while we have this period of time for the next few months, which we hope we have, to prepare and to continue to expand our capacity and to continue to build new beds and staff them and continue to employ new people.
And in terms of the number of available ICU beds, how do we compare at the moment with similar-sized countries in Europe?
We are, at the moment, we started with 199 level 3 beds. And we now are up to, in terms of permanent funding, as far as I know, up to 200 and about 40 level 3 beds with 46 level 2 beds. So we're still well below the level where I'd like us to be. That's permanent funding. We still have some surge capacity, as I understand it, but that's being scaled back. Certainly in my own institution, it'll be scaled back by tomorrow. But we have extra beds as a result of the permanent funding, but not enough. So we still are running at about 6 per 100,000. Maybe going up to 6.5, and the standard in Europe would be about 10 to 11 per 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to get there, and quickly, if possible.
Just
but it is expensive, and that will be an issue for our government, but we do need to fund critical care in this country appropriately, and we've been asking for it, as is the HSE, for a number of years. And obviously the downturn economically didn't help, but I think it's something we can't afford not to do at this point in time.
Okay, just finally then, Catherine, looking over the past few months, and obviously you have been dealing with patients who were the most critically ill with coronavirus, what has surprised you most in terms of how it affects the body in the most severe cases?
The respiratory illness that they get and the damage that they get to their lungs is very, very, very impressive, I have to say. The pictures we're seeing on CAT scans of patients who have severe illness is very, very, very significant, and they have a very difficult time. And hopefully they will get good recovery, but there is a lot of physical damage done to the lungs. In addition, people can get damage to their kidneys. We have had reasonably good results in our intensive care units. Our current mortality is running at about 20-21%. That's still very high for any disease. But it is a very difficult disease to deal with in those people who get very sick, which, as you know, is about 4%, between 4 and 3% of all cases. Most people have a mild illness.
All right. Dr. Catherine Motherway, ICU consultant and also past president of the Intensive Care Society, thank you very much for joining me.